Hello and welcome to the All Terrain Podcast, brought to you by the Children and Youth Department of the Salvation Army in the United Kingdom and Ireland. I'm Jo Taylor, and in each episode I'll be inviting a guest to take a hypothetical hike with me as we find out about their real life journey to this point. Along the way, they'll make four choices and answer four questions. And in this episode, our guest is the Right Reverend Rose Hudson-Wilkin, who is the Bishop of Dover. Bishop Rose was born and raised in Jamaica and ordained to the priesthood in 1994. In 2007, she was appointed as a chaplain to Her Late Majesty the Queen, and in 2010 became the first female appointed to the position of the chaplain to the Speaker of the House of Commons. In November 2019, she was consecrated as a bishop in the Church of England and installed in Canterbury Cathedral as the Bishop of Dover. There she has a responsibility of looking after the Diocese of Canterbury on behalf of the Archbishop of Canterbury. Bishop Rose is in wide demand as a preacher and speaker, undertaking numerous engagements both nationally and internationally, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if you'd seen her on one of her regular appearances in local but also national media. She's married to Kenneth, who's a retired prison chaplain, and they have three adult children. So, you know who she is. I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation. So let's go on our hypothetical hike with Bishop Rose. Well, so we've got Bishop of Dover, Bishop Rose. It's so good to have you with us on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what being the Bishop of Dover looks like, what everyday life is like for you.
Thank you for having me on your podcast. With regards to everyday life, every day looks very different as Bishop of Dover. You know, I could spend one day in the office doing paperwork, reading emails, responding to people's requests, signing documents, preparing a sermon or preparing for a speaking engagement. And another day could be spent on several visits. I could be visiting schools, primary, secondary schools. In the evening, I could be licensing a new person. This summer, we will be ordaining new people for the ministry. So there is really never a day that looks alike. Doing confirmations, it's very, very varied and absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it sounds joyful, actually, and I hear the joy of what you do.
Thank you.
In your voice, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it as we go on our walk together. So, as you know, we ask every guest to make four choices and answer four questions as we travel together. And we're going to start by asking you for your first two choices to set the scene for us.
Sure.
So the first is, can you tell us where we're walking today?
Well, we're actually walking in Anglesey.
Oh, lovely.
Which is
beautiful.
Wales.
Part of the world.
It is. Yeah. But the first time I was on Anglesey, I was, wow, that looks like that bit of St. James in, that reminds me of Montego Bay. And of course, there's the sea as well. Yeah. So there were so many of the landscape there that reminded me of Jamaica, including seeing the ocean as well. And when I went there, I was with all the family. So that made it even more special.
I imagine the weather was a bit different.
Well, actually, we had a good day. We had
a good day
when we were there. Yes.
That is good. Yes. So the sea is somewhere that is special for you, being by the ocean.
Yes. Having the sea, sight of the sea, and the open air, the terrain, the lush green, the beach effect, all of that reminds me of home. And perhaps that's not a bad idea that I'm the Bishop of Dover, where we're also near the ocean.
near the ocean, and that kind of connection with your home is beautiful. And then you can choose some fellow travellers for our walk. You're there, I'm there, but we can bring three other people along with us, one living, one dead, and one fictional. So who's the first of those guests?
The living person who I would like to take on the journey is Lionel Richie.
Oh, wow. That is an excellent... Every now and then we get a repetition, like someone that's been before or someone that is unsurprising. But this is a new one.
This is a new one, yes.
Cool.
It's the love songs. It's the love songs.
Okay.
It's the songs that talks about our interconnectedness. So, you know, maybe you'll ask me something more about that later on. The person who is dead has to be Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Okay, excellent.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And I think my fictional character would be Robin Hood. I'm assuming he is fictional and he's not real.
Yeah, well, there's some conversation, isn't there? Maybe he was based on some kind of real,
yes.
Who knows? So what is it about those? I mean, I think I can guess. I think I see a bit of a strand running through those two. But what is it for
I think the Lionel Richie, actually, I had a couple of his songs to start my dance at my wedding. it's the love songs, you know, that I just absolutely adore. Lady, I'm your knight in shining armor and I love you. It's all about love, you know,
beautiful.
And there's just something very emotive that carries you. It's almost, you know, being on the wings and just flying, and it's terrific. And so, yes, I would love to have him with me along the journey, just singing his love songs.
That'd be amazing.
I would be in the fifth heaven if that were to happen. I think Archbishop Desmond Tutu as the person who is dead traveling with me, because there was something about that man that endured so much, and yet there was such joy in his heart. Yeah. You know, I remember sitting with him in Porto Alegre. We were there for the World Council of Churches and we were staying in the same hotel. And so he came and sat with us and he actually had a drink from my pina colada as well. but you know... he made us laugh so much.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes those who, you know, they talk about clowns, that in effect, they're really sad people. There's a sadness that they carry.
Yeah.
For me, with Desmond Tutu, he didn't carry the sadness. His joy was his faith.
Yeah.
You know, he had forgiven. He had called out. He had spoken truth to power. He had done all these things. He, you know, yes, this happened to me, but my God, I will not be deterred from living out the hope and the dream and the joy that is in my heart that comes from my faith. And so he most definitely has got to be with me on that journey. The fictional character is Robin Hood. And I've chosen Robin Hood. I've watched the film numerous times, and every time it comes on, I usually choose it over all the other things. There was something about this man. There was something about justice. What does the Lord require to do justice? You know, and so for me, I would need to have him on the journey, a real inspiration of someone who was not just thinking about himself and his loss, but also about a people around him, that he wanted justice for them. He wanted good to triumph over evil. And so that kind of inspiration I want with me.
Yeah, wow. Gosh, I wish I could have met the Archbishop Desmond Tutu and been in that space. Mm. Sounds like someone who... it doesn't just do joy, but is joy. Like that like that's so much more than just behaviour, yes, but about real depth of character. Mm. And I love Robin Hood as well. I love the idea of someone who is committed to people and
righting the wrongs.
Yeah, and in a broken system, finding ways around that to do good and to do right.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that is three very exciting companions. We're in a beautiful place. So now we can start getting into those questions and we will get your perspective and can imagine what our companions might be contributing to that along the way as well. So yeah, we know who's with us, where we are. And so the first question is, how do you face change?
I think in terms of how one faces change, one has first got to be alive.
Okay.
And to live into the moment, to recognize that change means growth. That change means growth. And one also has to envision what kind of change that you want to see. So it's not about having change done to you. You know, what change do I want to see? It is about having a vision and then putting your head on the block. And by that, I mean being the change that you want to see. One of my favorite songs is sung. I'm not sure if it's written by him, but it is sung by the late Michael Jackson.
Okay.
If you want to see change, take a look at the man in the mirror.
Yeah.
And when you look in the mirror, of course, you see yourself. Mm. And so, you know, you have got to be that architect of change. Don't leave it for somebody else to do. You know, don't say it's your problem or it's your job. No, 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 no. Let's make it our job. Let's be an architect of the change that we want to see.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Having not met you before, I feel like we're getting such a sense of who you are. And so often when we think about change, we think about the change that happens around us or the change that is done to us. And yet your first thought is the change that needs to happen and the change that we can be a part of.
Yes.
What does that look like for you? Like, what do you have any kind of examples or stories that you can share with us of where you've had to, or where you've seen that kind of change that people have brought about by that coming alive that you talk about?
I think I spent a long time working in Hackney, and one of the things that we were plagued with at that time were a lot of knife stabbings in that vicinity, in the area where I was. And so my thing was about engaging with the community, engaging with the mothers, with the young people. So whenever I walked along in the parish and I saw a group of young, and they were mostly lads, occasionally there was the odd girl in with the group, but where I saw groups of boys, I would deliberately walk through them. I would not cross the road. I would not step down off the pavement because they were congregated. I would go through them, and that means engaging with them.
Yeah.
And talking with them about their lives experiences. I remember as I came upon one group, they were boasting at the fact that on their mopeds, they could get in and out of their housing estate where the police cars couldn't go. And I remember stopping and saying to them, I heard that, but you know, I've been visiting hospitals lots of time. I've never seen a motorbike in a hospital bed. I've seen people because of the damage, you know. So it's engaging with them. It's engaging with them by asking them what they want out of life. And for many of them, it's the first time an adult is stopping and saying, you're of value. I'm going to spend time talking to you. I'm going to spend time listening to you. I'm going to spend time challenging you as well. You know, so the young man who I asked, what do you want to become? And he begins by telling me, my mother, and I said, stop. I'm not interested in what your mother wants you to be. I want to know what you want to be. And then he tells me that he would like to do anything that gets him lots of money. And I looked him square in the eye and said, young man, you're going to sell drugs. And to my horror, he never looked back at me and said, I wouldn't do that, you know. Yeah. So then being able to engage with him. And I hope for a long time to come that he will remember those conversations, because it's about saying you are important. It's also about challenge. For me, it was about challenging the mothers who were taking money from their 16-year-old children. You know, how do you do that? Where do you think they're getting the money from, I ask? You know, so you are responsible for him being incarcerated because you allowed him to think that it was okay what he was doing as long as he was bringing money home to you. So for me, change is about being in the mix and making a difference in that mix.
Yeah. So you kind of look at what's going on. You see who you are. You respond to that. I can see that being up close, isn't it? Like being in there, being like present in that space. Yeah. And I guess sometimes you don't know what's going to happen, right?
You don't. You don't know what's going to happen when you advocate for change. Sometimes people are not in the place where they want to see change. You're upsetting the apple cart, as it were. But I think what I have learned here from the children in our schools here at a school service, the children spoke about being courageous advocates. And so I have borrowed that phrase, and I now speak about being a courageous advocate for those who are most vulnerable. Because in effect, that's what we saw our Lord Jesus doing. He was a courageous advocate. You know, he wasn't afraid to call to call the Pharisees whitewashed sepulchres or brood of vipers. You know, so I think we too need to be courageous advocates as we, you know, stay on our journeys.
Yeah. Wow, that's a real challenge and a real encouragement as well and a very different way, I think, of thinking about change and our responsibility and being part of that in a really good way.
It's like, you know, what we do in this country and in many places is we give over our advocacy to others. You know, so we say, oh, the politicians. No, the politicians are not going to do that. Or the politicians are making certain policies in our name. We need to rise up and say, that particular policy, not in my name.
Yeah.
Here in Dover, of course, we have people crossing the channel in small boats and landing on our shores. And instead of our government tackling the issue of immigration, not by tackling the end product of people getting here, but asking the real serious questions, why are they leaving their beautiful warm countries to come to cold, freezing Europe? Is it climate change? Is it war? Is it hunger, famine, etc.? What is it? And then working internationally with other countries to try and make a difference. Instead, we have our governments playing political games with this particular topic and inciting the kind of behavior in our communities that ought not to be. So again, each person, and in particular, I want to challenge those of faith to wake up to the fact that we are one human race and to draw on a word which is also from South Africa, Ubuntu, which means because I am, you are, or because you are, I am. Again, thinking about our interconnectedness, we belong together, you know, so we don't need to carve up Britain and say, this is mine and you stay out. But how are we going to accommodate one another? You know, God forbid that there should be some huge natural disasters here on our shores. Where are we going to run to? And who are we going to run to? You know, so we should all the time be thinking about, well, what if this happens? How might we handle this? So we need to be courageous and we need to work for change together and not leave it up to so-called professional politicians.
Mm. Mm. I think that leads us really helpfully into our next question. So for you, Bishop Rose, how do you move through suffering?
I think suffering is not something we can put in a bottle and throw away and hope that it disappears with the tide. Suffering is real. And we need to learn to walk in each other's shoe. Yeah. We need to spend, it's uncomfortable, deeply uncomfortable, but we need to learn to step in it so that we can say, oh my God, this is what that experience is. What am I going to do to change that?
Yeah.
You know, so when we experience suffering, when we are empathetic enough to walk a mile with others, then we are ready to create the change that we need to see. So, for example, right in the early book of the Bible, in Genesis, we're told that God asked Cain, you know, where is your brother? And Cain had the audacity to say to God, am I my brother's keeper? What on earth are you asking me that question for? And actually the answer is yes, we are our brother's keeper. And that means we need to feel with them. We need to mourn with them. We need to weep with them. Last night on the news, I saw a father and what looked like a mother cradling their little children who had been bombed, just holding them, kissing their foreheads, you know.
Yeah.
I weep every time I see this. I wept at what happened in Israel. I continue to weep at what Israel is doing in Gaza, what is happening in Ukraine, what is happening in Sudan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't switch my television off. The news, however dreadful and terrible it is, I allow myself to see it and I weep with them because I know that in that very action, what it is doing, it is moving me to the next stage. It is moving me to the next stage of action, whatever that action might mean to be, again, in terms of advocating, being courageous advocates, speaking truth to power, and not playing the ridiculous games. And we do need to move through suffering, because if we don't move through the suffering, what you will have is that it creates the kind of rage that just sits there and simmers and simmers and simmers and is not very productive. So Israel speaks, for example, now of wanting to get rid of Hamas completely. But by its action, what it is doing is creating more Hamases, because there is a rage that is building up that sees no other way out than to retaliate. You hit me like this, I'm going to hit you back. And then I'm going to hit you even greater. And then the next one is going to hit even greater. So at some point, somewhere, we need to pause and really understand the weight of the suffering that will bring us to ask the question, how long? How long do we want to perpetuate this? Because that's what's been going on there for such a long time. And how long do we want to perpetuate this? Will our children and our grandchildren and great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren still be having Israeli-Hamas wars or whatever the wars are that we contribute to by not understanding. 2 weeks after, I think it was approximately 2 weeks after Hamas's atrocity in Israel, an Israeli mother was being interviewed on Newsnight. And she said, I thought my child, my son, had been kidnapped, but I've just learned a couple of days ago that he was murdered. She said, I do not want this vengeance in my name. Yeah. And I do not want this vengeance in my son's name. I stand up for love, she said. And I want all the mothers, Israeli mothers, Palestinian mothers, to stand for love, not hate, not vengeance. So we need to engage with suffering in a way that it touches us deep inside so that we can be at a place where we can say, enough is enough. Enough is enough. And, you know, sometimes, sadly, we wear suffering as a badge of honor. There are some people who enjoys wearing suffering as a badge of honor. They sort of wallow in it. They're like, oh, but this happened to me and this happened to me. And it's, you know, and they never get beyond that. Mm-hmm. So we need to move beyond that to a place of healing. And we've got to understand that we have a part to play in this.
Yeah.
Together in order to, you know, we will never eradicate suffering because you will also have suffering that comes from natural disasters. Although we bear in mind that there are some natural disasters that we have contributed to. You know, so when we chop down all the trees, you know, we are impacting on climate change. When we, when the roots in places are no longer there to hold the soil with, you know, heavy downpour of rain, that's going to impact, you know. So there are some natural disasters that we contribute to. But suffering, we won't ever take it all away, but we can do so much to alleviate suffering from one another, from those who are losing their lives trying to cross the channel, from those who are the women, you know, who are being murdered every day by menfolk in our communities. You know, we need to stop that suffering. We need to do something about it. And in particular, as a church, I am ashamed sometimes to be in the space called Christian with many others who advocate that women, simply by the fact that they are female, are not as with men. It's wrong. Yeah. We must stop preaching it. We must stop that kind of fundamentalism that perpetuates it, because actually we are contributing to those Taliban-like behaviors that we are seeing in our communities, where women are being murdered because men think that they have a right to do this, because the women have not done what they wanted them to do. And as a church, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves for perpetuating that in our churches.
Yeah. And just as you speak, I've just got like one particular beatitude just going round and round in my head, and it's the blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Yeah.
And it is that allowing, that outspilling of grief, isn't it? That outspilling of desperation, of pain and hurt. Like that's the mourning.
Yeah.
And because we do that mourning, that's where the comfort comes. That's where it stops being rage. That's where it stops hurting others. And where we, instead of like lashing out in our own pain, if instead we mourn, then it is comforted. And I'm thinking of so many of those situations that you are speaking about, where we either don't talk about them at all, particularly in the church and others where we like avoid the reality, others where we don't know what to say, so we don't say anything. But actually we're not asked to kind of know or to, we're asked to mourn and to grieve and to pour out our sorrow. And that's something that we can.
And that also means standing alongside. Standing alongside and not separating ourselves out. And, you know, I'm all right, Jack.
It is. It's so, like, I think especially in the moment where the images and the stories that we're hearing from various places in the world, but particularly Gaza, it's so easy to look away because of the pain it causes. But you know, the call isn't to look away, it's to mourn, it's to stay there, grieve, it's to hurt, it's to feel it.
I'm reminded of the Matthew 25 passage where Jesus said, I was hungry and thirsty, you gave me nothing to eat or drink. I was sick and in prison, you did not visit me. I was naked, you did not clothe me. And the response was, but Lord, we know you. Surely if we had seen you, we would have done it. But inasmuch as you haven't done it to all these, you haven't done it to me. You know, we don't pick and choose who we do it to. We mourn with those who mourn, we stay with them. We, you know, it's like it's that Garden Gethsemane experience. You know, could you not just wait with me for a little while? Could you not just stay awake with me, you know, and feel what I'm going through?
He was so hurt, wasn't he? Jesus was so hurt that they couldn't they couldn't stay awake, that they couldn't they couldn't stand watch. And that that's our challenge, isn't it? Sometimes there's little we can do other than bear witness, but we are called to bear witness.
We certainly are.
I feel quite emotional, Bishop Rose. I feel like I feel really challenged, actually, to see and to feel. And I think I'm really challenged that as we continue our conversation, but also after this, I need to make some space to do that. And I'm hoping that others might feel that as well, and to that combination of those two answers, actually, of that looking in the mirror and allowing to see my grief reflected and that spur me into something. Thank you. Well, I'm going to come back to that and allow myself to do the grieving. But it would be messy if I did it here while everyone's listening. So we can, we will move on and ask you to make another one of your choices now. And given the way that you spoke about Lionel Richie earlier, I'm excited about this. So if we, if you were to listen to some music or have something in your ears while you were walking that you would want to bring to share with us, what would that be?
I have a variety of things here. The first one would have to be Labi Siffre. The higher you build your barrier, the taller I become. And the chorus, of course, something inside so strong. I know that I will make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. So this, this, that song more than any other is a real mantra for me. And has been a mantra throughout my life. You know, where I have learned to depend on God. And so when I sing that song, I am talking to God. You know, that's God who I'm talking about. You know, something inside so strong. And I know, I'm not just thinking, I'm not just sort of, you know, well, feeling sorry for myself. I know I'm going to make it because God is within me. That is my right hand and my left and my go-to. And that, you know, and God within me, there was a little chorus we used to sing as children that says, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. And I used to sing that when I was sort of 5, 6, 7 year old. You know, I remember that. And now it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I believe it. That's the thing. I actually believe it. And because I believe it, I can use that mantra.
I think you've planted an earworm there, and I'm not mad about it because it's a great song. So if after this that is what we're singing, then brilliant. Great.
Something
if that's
inside
just going
so
around
strong.
And around. Yeah.
You know, I know that I will make it. Doesn't matter what is happening. Yeah. And the other thing on my playlist also is Aretha Franklin.
Of course.
R-E-S-P-C-T, find out what it means to me. That is a very special song to me. You know, as a Black woman growing up in a predominantly white country, where from time to time, I know that I have experienced racism. Mm. You know, that's my other mantra that I will just sing, you know, to help me to remind myself that it is actually their problem. It is not my problem. You know, the inadequacy lies within them. And that is why they behave the way they do. And so I need to hold my head up high and remain strong, you know, in spite of that. But I love that song. I love that song, you know, wonderful. And the other thing on my playlist would have to be a Calypso song. I love Calypso. Apart from the fact that I love to dance to Calypso, it is also the fact that within Calypso, we have a lot of social commentary. So someone had written a song about the fact that the Windrush generation, the fact that we were told, go away, you're not needed here. You know, and it's just amazing the fact that people are able to create songs and to sing. You know, you see, that's a great thing to be able to do and a great thing for my people. I'm going to say my people with a little bit of tongue in cheek because we're all God's people. And, you know, and I belong wherever I go, I belong. But in particular, my black people know how to not bury their heads, but, you know, how to sing, you know, to sing through the storms. Oh, my God. And to do it in such a way that it enables others to join them in the dance and the song and to let the other side realize how foolish their behavior has been.
It's part of a long tradition, isn't it? It starts with the Psalms where we like right back then, and then that kind of the earliest gospel music, which
absolutely
I love because of its social commentary, because
absolutely.
It is rooted and it explores the fullness of who God is.
It certainly does.
In a hurting people and in a hurting world. It doesn't dismiss that experience.
It doesn't.
It names it.
And as you mentioned,
worships in it.
Yes, as you mentioned the psalm, you know, I think of by the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down and there we wailed when we remembered Zion. And, you know, they carried us away captivity. They desired from us a song. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? But we can sing the Lord's song. And we will sing the Lord's song in a strange land because God is with us. You know, so there is that aspect. And there is also, of course, you know, as a Jamaican, you know, I have to have reggae. And that means Bob Marley. You know, that's got to be on the playlist. And I use one of his songs also as a mantra. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. You know, this sense again, social commentary and actually prophetic words coming from Bob Marley. So that has to be on my playlist. You know, there are lots of religious hymns, but one that I was singing quite recently was in Christ alone, my hope is found. That I find quite beautiful. But in particular, the last verse of it, no guilt in life, no fear in death. This is the power of Christ in me. From life's first cry to final breath, Jesus commands my destiny. But here is the clinch thing for me. No power of hell. And this one, no scheme of man can ever pluck me from his hand. Yeah. Those two lines in particular, no power of hell, no scheme of man can ever pluck me from his hand. I just sing that with such gusto, because, you know, again, there is a fundamentalism within the church, within the Christian church, that tells me that because I'm a woman, that I should keep my mouth shut. Because I'm a woman, I'm not allowed to speak, I'm not allowed to lead. And I'm saying, go away, no power of hell.
No power of
hell. No scheme, none of your scheme. You take it back to where you came from. You know, that will not take me from God's hands. You know, I will speak his message. I will live into his message and all that he calls me to be. Here in the power of Christ, I'll stand.
We sang that at that hymn at church on Easter Sunday. And
powerful.
I'm not particularly charismatic in my sung worship, but that verse, that song. And I was holding my daughter's hand as we sang. And as we got to those lines, my hand went up with hers in it. And she's nearly 13. So that age where everything her mum does is like totally embarrassing. She pulled my hand back down again because I'd taken hers up with me. But I feel that I feel that deeply, and feel your joy in singing those words. Brilliant choices. And I'm
Thank
so
you.
Glad you sang as well. That has put a proper smile on my face, which takes us perfectly into our third question. And obviously, like, one of these ways is going to be music, and I've heard you talk about the joy that you feel in some of those songs that you sing. But beyond that, how do you receive joy, Bishop Rose?
You know, I think for those of us who profess faith, joy is not an option. And a few years ago on the television, there was an Easter service and someone was preaching about joy, and I saw no joy being exhibited. And so I switched it off. I think joy is not an option. It is deep. And that means that even when you are experiencing turmoil in life, that joy is that thing that keeps you buoyant, that keeps you afloat, that you know, exists to remind you of who you are, that tells you, you know, what you're experiencing is momentary. There is something deeper in your heart. When we were children in Sunday school, we used to sing the song, I've got a joy, 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 joy down in my heart. And then that's right. Another side of the congregation would shout, where? And when we'd say, down in my heart, where? Down in my heart. And yet, you know, we've got a joy in our heart. And I don't know whether you sang this verse, and if the devil doesn't like it, he can sit down and cry. Sit down and cry. Sit down and cry. And if the devil doesn't like it, he can sit down and cry. Cry, cry for A. but no, joy comes with knowing the love of God in our hearts. That, you know, that cannot be taken from us. And if ever that joy is taken from me, then I know I need to hang up my dog collar and hang up my robes if that joy ever gets taken away from me. I've got to hold on to that joy.
Yeah. How do you practice that joy? So I can hear it kind of deep within you, but what does that look like in terms of like feeling that and knowing that and connecting into that joy, even when it feels kind of dark around you?
I sometimes remind congregations that if they were to look at people attending a football match, then they will notice that on their way to the football mat, people are singing and it's all joyful, you know? And then they get there and they're singing all the way through. And only if their team loses that they stop singing. And so I always say to the congregation, why are you behaving as if your team have lost? Why aren't we joyful? So I think for me, I want to hear it. And I have been known in services to stop the service and said, my goodness, this sounds as if we're at a funeral, you know, and I've been to some joyful funerals too, you know, where we sing joyfully. So, and we are celebrating the life of the person. So I think for me, the practicing it is about recognizing the presence of God with one at all times. And it is, the joy is an acknowledgement of that in many ways. And so you walk into that space of joy, which allows you to acknowledge often the other things that happens, the sad things, the deeply disturbing things. But you know you are held by God in that space of joy. So nothing, it acts as that barrier that doesn't allow you to get to rock bottom, you know? Yeah. So you're constantly topping up that container with joy, and you top that up through prayer, through the reading of scripture, through fellowship, through worship. You keep that topped up. Because when the other thing gets poured into it, you want to make sure that your reserve is holding well.
Yeah, and it doesn't exist separate to all the other stuff.
No,
it's not instead of suffering.
Absolutely not.
It's not when things are good. It's all the things all the time.
Yeah, there's a lovely song that someone sings. I heard someone singing once that says, life is easy when you're up on the mountain. And then it talks about, but then when you're in the valley, you think, oh.
Yeah.
And it goes on to say, but the God of the mountain is still God in the valley. When things go wrong, he'll make them right. There's this sense that the God on the mountaintop hasn't gone away when you're down in the valley. He is still there with you, giving you joy and holding you and sustaining you through the valley experiences.
Yeah. Oh, I feel more joyful just for being with you as well.
Thank you.
In that experience you shared of being with Archbishop
Desmond
Tutu,
yes.
And him being joy. I hope you feel encouraged that I get that same sense from you, that
you
don't just do joy, you are joy. And it's really infectious and a real reminder that we should carry that joy openly and out loud because of how it impacts other people. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
And we got to our final choice after a lot of talking and a lot of stuff covered. Need a little bit of sustenance, a little pick me up.
Yes.
So what would be in your snack bag?
Well, in my snack bag would be some nuts. And the particular nuts, my favorite nuts, is cashew.
Oh, lovely.
Cashew nuts. Now, cashew nut is very expensive. And what's interesting is I went to I went to a number of islands in the Caribbean, and Montserrat, I saw it, and I saw it in another, it's gone out of my head what this other very tiny island, Ceiba. But when I was in Montserrat and in Ceiba, and also in Grenada, I saw cashew nuts being grown on a tree. And it was only then that I was able to appreciate why cashew is so expensive, because there is one nut to a fruit, one nut, and that's why it is so expensive. But it reminds me that sometimes it is, the things that gives us real sustenance might not necessarily be scattered all over the ground, but you may have to reach up to get it. You may have to extend yourself. You may have to reach higher. The low-hanging fruits, they're easy to get to, and so because it's so easy, then okay, we don't have to worry
That'll do.
about it. That exactly. But when you have to climb higher and reach above and beyond, you actually begin to appreciate the fruit, and you don't just eat it. You don't just gobble it all up in one go. You take your time with it, and you allow yourself to taste and smell and feel every bit of it, and be a part of it.
Excellent. Oh, that's a good choice. I'm happy with that. I love a cashew nut. And I'll think about them a bit more carefully next time I just mindlessly eating away. And so we get to our final question. Just how do you mature in service?
I thought about that question. How does one mature in service? And the only answer that came to me was one day at a time, one step at a time. There's that lovely hymn that we sing, "O Jesus, I Have Promised." And in that hymn, it says, "Oh, let me see thy footsteps, and in them plant my own. My hopes to follow duly is in thy strength alone." So there is something about, this is not something that is to be rushed. We have to do the walk. We can't, what's the word where you go around it, circumvent it, or whatever the right word is. We have to go through that. There's a lovely story told of a little child who, with the butterfly and the various phases that it goes through, and it thought it was helping the butterfly by pulling on the stuff to in order for it to, and then it realizes that actually it is in the action of breaking free from that bit of thing around it that gives it the energy to be strong. So we mustn't always wish things away from us in our journeys, because every experience ought to be seen as a learning experience. It's a learning experience. And hence, if it is a learning experience, then there is something that we're going to take away from it. And if we are able to take something from it, then it's going to take us to that place of growing maturity. So let's not be in a rush along our journey, because being in a rush, we might just, bump our toes or hit something that we could have seen if we were walking in a more measured way and thinking as we're walking and looking. I always have this joke with my husband. He will look for something and say, "Rose, I can't see it." And I'll go over it, you know, the same area where he did look, and I would see it. And I said, darling, you look, but you haven't seen. You know, or sometimes, you know, there, you know, a variety of people. So I think to be mature, to remain mature in service, is to be ready with all our senses, with all our senses, to feel, you know, to touch, to see, to hear, to taste. We've got to have all of our senses open and used in order for us to grow and mature in our service.
Yeah, I think that's really important, isn't it? That not rushing the steps. I wonder what that balance is between kind of taking the next step and seeing what we see and what emerges with that kind of goal setting thing, with that kind of eye on a target. Like, what, how do we find balance there between kind of having this place that we want to get to in mind, but also allowing ourselves to do the thing that is emerging in front of us?
There was a little mantra that I carry. A long time ago, someone gave me a poster, and it had these words on it: do not go where the path leads. Go where there's no path and leave a trail. I was 21 years old when that was given to me. I still carry it daily with me and remember it. I still walk each day with the thought of, okay, God, so what is next? What do you want me to accomplish today? What do you want me to have accomplished in a few years' time, or in a year's time, or in a month's time? And trusting God to walk with me for that journey. So it's, you know, sometimes we... And it's interesting. Let me just step back. It's interesting. I often look at the fact that in Jamaica, the majority of our athletes are 100 meters and 200 meters and maybe 400 meters. So we go for the sprint.
Yeah.
And that's quite interesting because, you know, you rarely see a Jamaican doing long distance running. Okay. Rarely.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because I think that as a people, we are very much yesterday. I want it now. You know, it's got to be. And so what my faith has taught me is about trusting in God for what the future holds. And that it's not all just about today. So it's a holding in balance today, because today will contribute to tomorrow. But I don't need to anticipate tomorrow. I need to wait. I need to enjoy today, experience today in all its fullness. Because while I am looking and anticipating tomorrow, I might just miss something today. And it might be a person, it might be a task, you know, whatever. But how do I, in full knowledge, recognize the fact that the God of today is also God of tomorrow, and he was God of yesterday? You know, he's got it in control. And I just need to do and handle what is it before me. A lot of time I'm asked by folks, you know, how do you do all of this that you do? And I say to them, every day, the last thing at night, I look at the diary and offer that in my prayer. The first thing in the morning, I look at my diary and then offer it in prayer and then get on with it. I don't think about the next day. I have a great office that reminds me of what the next day and the following week might do. But in terms of what I do, I hold today and offer it to God, knowing that he is in charge of whatever plans are going on in the future. Yeah. But I'm attentive. I think being attentive to today enables us to hold the experiences that we can learn from and then step forward into the next footstep and the next new day.
Well, I think on that note, that's a ringing message to have in our ears. And so I want to thank you for letting us be part of this day and giving us your time and your wisdom and joining me on our walk today.
Thank you. I will continue on the walk.
Yeah, good. I'm going to stay tuned.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, what a conversation. I feel so challenged and so encouraged. When moments of real sadness for me, but also a real challenge, real encouragement, but overall a real sense of joy in who Bishop Rose is and what she does and her understanding of who God is and what he's calling us to be in the world. I hope you feel similarly challenged and encouraged on the things that Bishop Rose was calling us to, but also that challenge to figure out what it is that God has for us to do and the places we're called to make a change. I would really love to know what you thought about the conversation. Was there stuff there that resonated for you? Was there stuff that challenged? Did it raise questions? We've got a space where we can have those conversations with one another. It's over on Facebook. It's a group called the All Terrain Conversations. And if you search just that, the All Terrain Conversations, you can join the group there. I would so love to hear from you about this or any of our episodes. And if you're enjoying these chats, don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you get your podcasts. This will mean that every episode drops straight into your phone, making sure that you don't miss out. We'd also love it if you could share the podcast across your social media channels. And if you're listening on Apple Podcast, it'd be great if you could give the show a rating or write us a review. Those things help us to get heard by even more people. We also have a brilliant set of sketch notes to accompany each episode, and they can be found by searching for the All Terrain Podcast or clicking the link in the episode description. I'll be back soon with another guest who will be facing the four choices, answering the four questions, and sharing their wisdom learned along the way on the All Terrain Podcast. So until then, goodbye, and thanks for listening.